Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a
creepy way. Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2019 movie Synchronic.
Yeah, we are.
Directed by Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, who we know from The Endless. And a couple other things, but The Endless is probably the best that they've done.
What was the other movie we talked about? We talked about both of them, Endless and...
whatever the first one was called. Starts with an R. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
It does start with an R. I didn't watch...
Spring is really good.
Yeah, I still haven't seen that.
It's a different kind of movie, though.
Is it set in its own universe? Because it seems like the rest of the movies are kind of set in the same universe.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Again, Spring is kind of a different thing. It's a good thing. We should talk about it. It's more of a love story.
Resolution.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Resolution was the was it a short? Maybe it was just a very low budget movie that led.
It was not a short, but it was like one setting, right? The cabin.
Yes. Yeah. And then The Endless was also very cheap to make, but really great. For the budget. Mm-hmm. Oh, so great. And this movie, this movie is what happens when these guys get to hire real actors.
Yes.
Because, you know, they played the leads in the other movies. Well, in the second movie.
Yeah, I was, I saw a trailer for this movie quite a while ago. And, you know, these guys have been on my radar since you introduced me to them. So when I saw that they were behind this movie, which looked like a, not like a high budget movie, but like a medium budget, but like a real like studio effort.
Yeah.
From these guys, I was really excited to see what they were going to do with this kind of newfound resources.
And what'd you think?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I liked the mood of it. I liked the performances. I didn't follow the logic of the rules of the world that they created. For the most part, I did, but I have some nitpicky questions. But I like that it was. It turns out it's a time travel movie. And while it's not apparent when you're first watching it, it's also like a time loopy narrative. Like it's not told in a linear fashion.
Correct.
But it's hard to figure that out until you're, I don't know, halfway or three quarters of the way through the movie.
Yeah, because it starts out as, well, like the other movies before. You don't know what kind of movie you're, I mean, we could kind of guess because they've done this time travel stuff before. But you don't really know what you're getting into. It's not like an M. Night Shyamalan twist. It's right. you just widen out your scope until you see like what's really going on.
Yeah, it unfolds in a really satisfying way.
Yeah, I really like this movie.
You never feel like the rug was pulled out from under you.
Oh no, and it's not as good as Tenet, you know, which has a million little details, and you want to go back and look at every single one of them. But, and it's kind of much simpler plot.
Mm-hmm.
But the story is pretty good. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm less satisfied, I think, with, like, I thought The Endless was maybe because of the surprise factor or because of, like, the whole cult idea. that it was that was more clever than this was. But this was really well done, and the relationship story part of this I thought was really good. Like, if nothing weird mm-hmm. happened in this movie, if it would just the two paramedic guys who were like best friends, but they were dealing with their own struggles, that would have been enough.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's like a really good. It feels like something a really good screenwriter would describe, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're gonna do a genre movie, you still have to start with real deep characters that have real true emotional stakes.
Yeah.
And then you can layer on the whatever genre conventions you want.
Yeah, because you have to care about these people, otherwise it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I stepped over you, but did you enjoy this movie? It sounds like you did.
I liked it a lot. In fact, I think I probably, in my Letterboxd, off-the-cuff grade, I think I probably gave it less stars than I wanted to, just because, again, I don't think it's like a perfectly made movie, but it was so much, well, fun's the wrong word. It was so enjoyable to watch it. Like, I instantly cared about these guys and what was going on. And I wanted to know at every point of the story, except maybe the end, I wanted to know what was going to happen next because I thought it was so, like you said, it unfolded in such a satisfying way that everybody was slightly deeper than you expected them to be.
Yeah.
So, shall we dive in?
I think we should.
Okay, Ruining Synchronic, 2019. So the film opens with Steve, played by Anthony Mackie, who we know as the Falcon, who is a ladies' man of sorts, and Dennis, who is Jamie Dornan, who we know as Christian Grey from the 50 Shades of Grey movies, none of which I've actually seen.
I've seen all of them.
Oh, are they good?
No.
Okay. Is he good?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm actually, so I saw him in those movies and I thought, this is an actor that completely lacks any sort of charisma. Turns out that's not true. Just, I think he did not want to be in those movies.
Yeah, maybe. Well, they were pretty one note, right?
Yeah. I mean, they were bad. But he was in, he was in a British TV show called, I want to say the Fall, with Scully.
Oh,
Gillian Anderson.
Yeah.
With her, and he played a super creepy serial killer.
Nice.
Like, it's so creepy. I got to the end of that first episode and I was almost out on the show. I was like, nope, not going to do this.
Oh, I love it.
So he's, I guess counterintuitively, after my first experience with him in the 50 Shades movies, he's really good. I think he's really good in this.
Oh, yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have
and Anthony Mackie.
Oh, he's good. He's really good. Yeah.
I mean, he's good in the Marvel movies, but, you know, that's sort of, I think that's kind of a role that doesn't require a lot of, doesn't require acting so much as it just requires screen presence.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't see a lot of deft touches to the Marvel characters.
Right. It's not required.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's really good in this movie. He's funny, but in a completely different way than he is in the Marvel. He's funny, but like in a really sad way.
Yeah. Oh no. This was a juicy role. As it turns out, both these guys have kind of, although, definitely Anthony Mackie's character has more to deal with. But Dennis, again, Jamie Dornan, who plays a married father who is Steve's best friend, and they work together on an ambulance crew in New Orleans. It turns out they both have stuff going on. And that becomes really interesting. So they're called out into a series of cases where people are either dead, in strange circumstances, or whose stories are really incoherent. And the cases,
well, but before, well, oh. Before we even get there, what did you think of like the? I don't remember. Was it a cold open or was it just, was it really just like the first post credit scene? I don't remember. It doesn't matter. What did you think of the opening scene?
You have to remind me. Where they come on scene of
the boyfriend got into the elevator and the girlfriend was in bed.
I thought that was weird. I thought that was actually it was becoming kind of a what was it called? Annihilation? Is that what the movie's called? With I thought it might be that sort of thing. Because the cold open is they have these people who are again taking this synthetic. Well, we learn it's a synthetic DMT or a synthetic hallucinogen called Synchronic, and so they're going on this trip. And by the way, I got really into listening to podcasts about people talking about ayahuasca and DMT and like psychonauts and all that stuff. I mean, of course, I would never because A, I couldn't for my job, and B, I'm a scaredy cat and wouldn't want to break my brain because apparently that has been known to happen, even with people who are really advocates of the stuff for a while and then have to get checked into a mental institution for a bit to just find themselves again. Sounds like a lot of work and, you know, I've got a family. So, but I'm fascinated by that whole, the whole idea of taking DMT or something and then opening up your consciousness to ways of thinking that your brain normally prevents you from. This kind of gets in a Lovecrafty direction, in my mind at least, because one of the big points of Lovecraft is you don't want to know the truth with the big T because you go crazy for various reasons. And by the way, we're going to get into H.P. Lovecraft in another second here because all these cases are linked to a new designer drug called Synchronic, which is, again, a synthetic drug sold at, like, vape stores and smoke shops and stuff. We had a huge problem with that sort of thing in Anchorage with K2 and Spice that were a synthetic marijuana. And it was who knows what was sprayed on the shit, and it came in from China, I think. But it was so bad. I mean, every single day we're getting dozens of calls of people that were like passed out catatonic from that stuff. So it was bad. And people would kind of, you know, wake up angry. So we would, there'd be a variety of resources that were just part of that call. We found that very taxing. And they finally changed the laws. This is actually part of this story, too, is that they finally changed the laws because what they were doing chemically, people were just changing molecules in drugs, which made them a new drug, but with the same effects. And therefore, they weren't illegal because their law, because they were something new.
Right.
So they finally had to draft laws that were broad enough to cover anything sort of synthetically trying to be something else.
Writing good regulations is really difficult.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
I deal with a lot of bad ones in my job.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Unintended consequences are probably a big problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, anyway, so at a domestic abuse call, they find a stabbing victim and an old sword embedded in the wall. And I don't understand the physics or whatever of what they're trying to do, but I really appreciate when we finally figure out why that sword is so weird looking.
Yeah.
Because it just looks like one of those big cheese knives, you know, that are kind of hollow in the middle. Not hollow, but like empty space in the middle.
Yeah, it looks like the frame of a knife or the frame of a sword.
Exactly. So,
And I like that this movie trusts its audience enough that it never feels the need to go back and explain stuff. It trusts you to catch up.
Yeah, that's what these guys do really well.
To connect the dots on your own.
Exactly. Yep. So while Steve is tending to an injured man, he is accidentally stuck by a dirty needle. Yow. Which right there, it's a horror movie.
Nothing gave me the chills like that scene.
Oh, yeah, because they're walking into, of course, as paramedics. And it's funny because I'm wondering, like, where are all the fucking cops in this movie? But when we meet the cops, we realize, oh, yeah, we don't need them. They're the worst. But because you just see the cops through the eyes of the paramedics. So, yeah, the cops are just, yeah, do your job. It's gross. We don't want to touch it at all. So they have to go in and they assume it's like a heroin overdose or something. And one of the guys who's laying on the ground, he's got some sort of hole in the front of his chest. Turns out he's got a hole that went all the way through him, and it turns out to be a sword wound, but they find that out slightly later. Because he goes and gives this other girl Narcan, and she... she's dead.
She was overdosed on heroin.
Yeah, she was overdosed, yeah. There's another, like... a drugged out girl in the back who's sort of trying to explain stuff, but she is like full of drugs on her own. So he's trying to get information and they're trying to figure out, okay, now where's the weapon or whatever. And yeah, in the middle of this, he gets stuck by a needle, which is again, horrifying, but it's a nice way for them to have him go to the hospital. And he has to do a bunch of routine tests, you know, an exposure report and all that stuff.
Yeah, for like a time loopy physics bending movie, it's so tight. Like the writing is so good.
Oh yeah,
the plot mechanics that they use are so good. The needle stick to get him to get checked out is brilliant.
Yeah,
because it you know, in the moment, you're not thinking, oh, this is just a step to get them to somewhere else, because it is so shocking, but so in line with what they do. That it feels so seamless. It's like it's like the prestige of the magic trick. It's great.
Yeah. It's almost like our mom in real life. You know, you take her to an eye appointment and suddenly we figure out she had a heart attack.
Right.
Yeah. And they fixed what could have potentially been a fatal thing that would have gone undetected.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, again, not unreasonable, just a great little plot mechanic. So, then we learned that, okay, so he discovered that, great, he doesn't have AIDS or whatever, but he does have cancer. He's got a huge old tumor in his brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, Then we also learn a little bit of the nitty gritty as far as he has a non-calcified pineal gland. Remember when I mentioned the pineal gland when we talked about Reanimator?
I do not.
Okay. That's funny. Well, so during our Reanimator talk, also I made a factual error. So I said I remembered Barbara Crampton like wearing some sort of like leather bondage outfit or something in maybe a Reanimator 2. Well, she wasn't in Reanimator 2, but she was in the movie called The Beyond, which is another Stuart Gordon movie about another H.P. Lovecraft story. And that talks about the pineal gland as the gland that actually, if it activates, then you can like see the whole universe going around you. But once you see them, they see you. So... it is a really good story, but it's been, I think I mentioned before, there's a really good claymation version of that story.
What was the movie that had us watch that had something to do with like activating the part of your brain to see the parts of the universe?
Oh, I don't remember.
I want to say it was a Natalie Wood movie.
Oh, yeah, Dream something or other with Christopher Walken. It's actually the Christopher Walken Natalie Wood movie they're making when Natalie Wood died, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dreamscape.
Watched that at her house on Betamax.
Yeah. No, I remember that movie for a couple reasons. That was a weird movie.
It felt like it was the first step into her trying to get us to take psychedelics with her.
Yeah. Well, and maybe, again, maybe that's sort of my curiosity with the whole thing, because that's all in the same line as this. So, yeah.
Brainstorm.
Yeah. Okay. So then we learn he has this weird pineal gland or pineal gland that it's non-calcified. Apparently, as you get older, it calcifies, but when you're young, it's all like fresh and gooey and whatever, and allows you to experience, I don't remember what the explanation was, but when you take this, we learn throughout the movie that when you take the synchronic and you have a juicy pineal gland, then you can travel back in time.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, that's not what this movie is about at this moment. The first, third, maybe half of this movie has nothing to do with weird time travel shit, except it's kind of incidental. There's little hints that are laid, little groundwork, like, again, the sword, and he finds this weird Roman coin or something. Not Roman, weird older coin.
There's supposedly spontaneous human combustion.
Yes, yes. Well, that's the thing is that, so the second call is a burn victim, spontaneous human combustion. And the third call is a bite from a venomous snake that no longer is found in the area. And that's the couple that we met in the cold open, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love how put out they are that they called them out for a burn victim.
Yes.
And they get there and they're like, this is not a burn victim. This is a corpse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. like this is somebody else's job here. Yeah.
Yeah.
You call up the medical examiner. We don't have to. You don't send an ambulance for this. By the way, all along you go back and forth into the ambulance as they're transporting people. And again, this is another way they sort of play with time because, you know, you realize that these ambulance trips aren't necessarily going in order.
Right. Yeah. That was... yeah, that was a nice thing to figure out.
Yeah. And
but yeah, I like just the, again, this movie is so tight. I love the editing devices they're used where, I mean, this movie is about Steve, is about Anthony Mackie, yes. Right? And a lot of the time jumping is edited in a way so that it shows him in the same position while they switch scenes.
Yes.
So it's I don't know what kind of cut that is, but
that's on purpose.
It was very it was on purpose, and it was very effective. And once you understand that that is the language of the movie, like everything falls into place.
Well, and that why I watched an interview with Justin Benson, Aaron Moorhead, and Ali Ioannidis, who plays the daughter in this one, the older daughter, who also is in, Into the Badlands?
Yes. Have you seen that show?
I have not, but now I want to, now that I've seen a trailer for it.
It is a batshit crazy show.
Yeah. It says, looks like it's got a crazy cast, too.
It does. It does. And it's, yeah. It's a show where all of the actors take themselves very seriously, but the show does not.
Sweet. Yeah, anyway, in the interview that I listened to or watched on YouTube, they were talking, or one of the guys was talking about they wanted to show somebody whose consciousness is going from one time to another time, but without any cuts. Like, it just happened right before your eyes, which said, you know, he sort of offhandedly said, yeah, although those scenes, you know, took like days and days of shooting and a whole bunch of special effects to achieve. But we wanted it to look like it was all just very, very seamless. And so at this point, we know that Steve, Anthony Mackie, he's got a big old brain tumor, right? So he's got a lot going on, but he doesn't want to tell anybody about it. Although he's obviously having some pain, he's been taking a codeine or Vicodin or something from the ambulance pharmacy thing they have.
Yeah, and he has a history of being a bit of a party guy, player.
Oh, and I love the fact. Okay, so Dennis's character, his central conflict is he is the father of an 18-year-old and a toddler, right? Or a 1-year-old.
Infant, yeah.
Infant, yeah. Yeah. I think maybe 1 year old, because I think it's the 1 year old's birthday or something, right?
Yeah. Like, that seems like a horror movie in and of itself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Dennis is like, he even says like the words out loud right away. He's like, never, never have like a new child 18 years after another child. And then we go again, another great device. We go to the 1 year old birthday party where, you know, Steve is there because Steve's Dennis's best friend, right? And Steve is off, like, they're in his park or something. And Steve is off in this like lawn chair, kind of far away from the rest of the party. And Dennis's wife comes over with the infant and is like, see you, Uncle Steve, or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And among the clever dialogue they have, which is clever and really good, you know, is also the fact she drops that, oh, yeah, this is what happens when you can't be a part of the main party because you've slept with all the wives.
All of mommy's friends.
Yes, all of mommy's friends. Exactly. So we realize that, like, so Steve is the ladies man who is also like the bachelor, like loner kind of guy. And yeah, Dennis
that one sentence gave you his entire backstory.
Exactly. Yep. And Dennis is, you know, the guy who's like anchored by his family in all the ways of an anchor. And they're both jealous of each other's life positions. Like, Dennis thinks Steve's got the, you know, got like the world on a string or whatever that phrase is. Because Steve is like, wakes up with a new person. Like, I think one of the things we actually see him wake up next to somebody who he doesn't know her name.
Right.
It's like, we, you know, wakes up after sleeping with somebody like, well, it was nice to have met you. You know, and then he walks up, goes off to work or something.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's such a fresh relationship. He goes in to kiss her and she's like, no.
Yeah. and Dennis is solely jealous of that. And yet Steve, a recent recipient of the knowledge, he's got a gigantic inoperable brain tumor, is like, oh, you know, like, you may think that being me is great, but you've got the best life ever. You've got a wife that loves you and you're in love with, and you've got great kids and blah, blah, blah. So, like I said, if this movie was all about that relationship, it'd be on a different channel. It'd be a Hallmark movie. Maybe a good one.
And Anthony Mackie is so good. It's written all over his face that he's got this news and he's reacting to his best friend. And he never says the words, but you understand that one of the things that's really bumming him out is that he's going to die. And really, he's leaving like no footprint on the world. Like,
yeah.
Like, his friends will be bummed, but other than that, no one, it's not going to matter to anybody that he's gone.
No, he hasn't left his mark.
Mm-hmm.
Put a pin in that thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, this movie trusts its audience. It never has to say those words out loud.
Oh, no.
But you feel it and you understand it.
And also, you know, he does such a good job just internalizing or expressing that internally he is dying, poor choice of words, to unburden this truth, whatever, but doesn't want to bum everybody out. And the other hand, we have Dennis, who is bitching nonstop about being a father and all this stuff. I mean, he's, you know, and things get worse for Dennis here in a moment. But it's like,
yeah, you kind of feel like Dennis is insufferable. Yeah. And then, like, one of the worst tragedies you can think of befalls him, and you feel so bad for him.
Oh, yeah.
You feel worse for him than you do for Steve.
Oh, no, exactly. And now Steve can't tell him, because it's like, you think you got it bad. Yeah. So, okay, so back to the plot. So then they go on a call to a drug party, and they find a dead body, and there's another girl there that says there was a third person who is there at the party that's missing. And that third person is Brianna, played by Ali Unides, who is Dennis's 18-year-old daughter.
Recently moved out of the house so she could live in the dorms.
Yes, yes. Yep. Yeah, really close with her dad, but needed to make a break.
Mm-hmm. And again, they never say these words, but they convey it so quickly and so effortlessly in the movie that, you know, she's feeling kind of incidental now that they have this new baby.
Exactly.
And she's not feeling the love from her parents, so she wants to set out on her own. And she's at that age where she wants to go try and be an adult, but she doesn't really know what she wants to do with her life. They do such a good job showing that she's moving out probably sooner than she's really comfortable with, but she's not really feeling welcome at home anymore, even though her parents are devastated that she wants to leave.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. A lot going on. So both these guys have these huge things going on. And then this happens. And then we have this another thing involving Synchronic, and now she's missing. And it becomes a big deal. It's not like sort of an incidental. It's like news. So the next morning, Steve does a freak out and goes to a local smoke shop and buys all the Synchronic. And by the way, I love this scene of like him being all keyed up anyway, and then going into this like vape shop or whatever to buy the synthetic drug. And the girl behind the counter he had to like get her from the back from getting high or whatever. And she's just like high as fuck and also doing this retail job where she's like, I didn't do anything to you, sir. Like whatever, like, you know. Anyway, he buys all this Synchronic that's left because it's been discontinued. And as he leaves, he's approached by this extremely white guy who offers to pay him triple what he paid for it. And Steve is like, no, fuck you. This is killing children. And then the next morning, Steve catches this guy in his house. It's another really, really good scene because,
it was a great jump scare.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and we had we have this ongoing conversation that actually gets brought up by other people because, you know, I tell a story and I maybe tell it like 15 times to 15 different people and then tell on the podcast and as if no one's ever heard it before. But it involves a conversation over whether to have a gun in my house. And, you know, my wife's sort of one off line is, well, you're not going to protect us. And so whenever I see a thing in this movie where, you know, like Steve thinks there's somebody in his house, so he goes and grabs a baseball bat or whatever, grabs something to use as a weapon. And then lo and behold, he finds a guy in his closet, which is like, motherfucker. Which is what you don't want. Because again, what do you do when you find somebody? Do you fill that person full of holes in real life? Not ideally. Anyway, so he finds a guy in the closet, and this is the chemist who created Synchronic. This is the same guy that offered to pay him triple. And he kind of gives him the quick exposition about how the synthetic drug that alters your perception, alters the pineal gland's perception of time. And children who have non-calcified pineal glands just pass through time, and adults seem to only partially move through time like ghosts. Is a weird concept that is not fully explored, but it's enough to give you, like, again, you don't want to over explain.
It just kind of sets the ground rules of the movie.
Yeah. So during the next call, victim of the sword fight dies, and Steve, who's a fan of the history of science, quotes Einstein on the meaningless of time when faced with his friend's death. Under stress of Brianna's disappearance, Dennis's marriage is deteriorating, which, again, this is just so real and sad. It's like the loss of a child is, I can't imagine anybody being able to continue being married after that. I mean, the people pull it off, good for them, but it just would be the worst.
Are you familiar with that actress that played the wife?
I'm not, but I don't have her name written down there, which is bad on me.
Katie Asselton.
Okay. Wife of a big time, a Duplass brother, right?
Oh, is she married to one?
I think so.
In real life?
Yeah.
She played his wife on the TV show The League. And she was very, very funny on that show.
Yeah. She's good in this too. She doesn't have a lot to, not a lot of screen time.
Yeah. But she's good in a very not funny way.
Yeah.
Oh, she's always surprising to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is that, like, at one point, they're sitting in the kitchen and both, like, just lost in grief. And he's trying to talk to her about something. And she just looks at him like, what the fuck are you doing to find her? Like, why are we having this conversation? Go do something to find her, you know? And he's like, what am I supposed to, you know? So, and again, you don't have to, he doesn't have to say the words. And it flashes to another scene, but you realize, yeah, he doesn't know what to do either. Their daughter has disappeared. And she's involved with this drug thing. And
vanished off the face of the earth.
Yeah. And again, this is on the media at the time. So it's like, it's a big deal. So yeah, it seems horrible. And so Steve does the only logical thing. He's like, fuck it. I'm gonna die anyway. So, let's take this drug, find out what's going on. So he takes a dose of Synchronic, little white pill, and travels back in time. And does the most reasonable thing, I think, in any of these movies we've seen, or actually not these movies, but any of the time travel kind of movies, is he's like, what the fuck was that? I'm going to get on my video recorder and start recording shit and trying to explain stuff. And I'm going to get a whiteboard out. And I'm just going to record all this stuff because I don't know what just happened, but I got to record it somehow.
I love the fact that he had a whiteboard.
Well, there's that. But yeah. So yeah, he goes.
Do you think he went out and bought a whiteboard?
Maybe
for his videos.
Yeah. And did he maybe already had that digital watch, but, yeah, he basically figures out the rules right away where he, for 7 minutes, he's back in time and he gets attacked by a conquistador. Because again, they're in New Orleans. So he's moving in time, but not in space, is the thought. And he does a couple other of these things. One where he goes back to the Ice Age. And he figures out that, okay, it's where exactly in space he was when he took the drug, or when the drug kicked in, is how far back in time he will be going. So again, it's just weird. And then he talks about how he can. Okay, so he goes back to the Ice Age and nearly freezes to death because he doesn't have, you know, any like heavy clothes or anything. And he figures, okay, next time he goes back, he's like, got a big old winter jacket on and he's got firewood with him and whatever. And he wants to know like how much he can bring back with him. Does he have to be touching it? And the one thing that kind of weirded me out is like, he talks about touch. Like, can you bring something back by touching them? And then he's like wearing gloves. Like, he never actually touches his dog that he takes back in time with him. Hawking.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the rules.
Okay.
So what is your understanding of how this works? So you take one pill.
Yes.
You travel back for 7 minutes.
Yep.
And after 7 minutes, you
go back
to the present as long as you're in the same place you were when you arrived.
Yes.
And what happens if you're not in the same place?
Then you stay lost.
Forever.
Well, unless somebody goes back with a dose of the drug, as we find out at the very end.
So when he traveled back to the KKKville.
Yes.
And he missed his window the first time because he got chased out of the house.
Oh.
How did he get back?
So he had to. Yeah, good question. Did he just go back and by going back that automatically sent him back? Or by going back, did he have to take another dose of the drug?
That was my question. Did he take another dose and I missed it?
He must have. Like, if not, that's a plot hole.
Yeah, because the ending, again, confused me about why he couldn't make it back at the end.
Yeah, I think, you know what? It's another good reason to watch it again. Because it would make complete sense if he took another pill, got to that same place, and then got back to his own time.
Yeah. So if he did, if I missed that, he took the pill to come back once he got back to the location. That would make sense about how he got Brianna back.
Yes. Yeah. And pretty much the only thing that would make sense.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, because she was roughly in the same place as she... Well, no. The idea... Well, okay. I guess we'll get there when we get there. But when... So, mm-hmm. Presumably, when she took the dose... Then she wandered away, and she wandered to a familiar spot to her, which was the rock at the park where the party was.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, so going back to the party, one of the things that happens at the party is, Steve notices that Brianne, the 18-year-old, is sitting on a rock kind of by herself. And so he goes over, and, you know, being like a cool uncle or whatever, they trade witty repartee, and you notice that the rock has the words always ALLWAYS carved into the rock,
right?
Which is not explained until the very end what that's all about. But so she would have theoretically back in time wandered off to and found a place that she recognized, which was where this rock is. So she was, that wasn't where she took the dose. That was where she ended up, which is why she needed another dose to get back to the place there she needed.
Well, she had to have taken the dose at the party.
Yeah.
And then wandered off and was on the rock when
it kicked in. Okay, there we go. That makes sense. Okay, that worked. So the party wasn't geographically very far from the rock, apparently.
I guess.
Yeah, or it took a long time to kick in. Who knows? Yeah. Anyway, yeah, a little bit of nitpickery, but yeah, mm-hmm. It does. Whenever you have to think about that stuff, it kind of takes you a little bit out of the story,
right?
Because really, the end is the only part that I'm not completely satisfied with. Everything else, though,
yeah.
So Steve is now okay. In behind the scenes, like off camera, Dennis's marriage is collapsing, and it's all bad. And also some morphine is disappearing from the ambulance. And so Dennis assumes that it's Steve, who's like ladies man, goddamn, druggy, whatever.
Perpetually hungover, seemingly.
Exactly, yeah. So
find out it's not that. He has a brain tumor.
Yeah, yeah. And we actually find out later that the asshole ambulance driver that they hate... worst ambulance driver ever. It was only on scene or on camera for like 30 seconds. Great though. Great character. It turns out he was the one all along who was stealing the morphine. So everybody's satisfied with that revelation. So Steve is doing all these experiments and he figures, so he's to develop some rules with this. He's like, okay, then I can do something that will give my life meaning. I can bring Brianna back. That mm-hmm. will give my life meaning. And again, give me some sort of like a mark on the world. Yeah. So.
Yep.
But one of the experiments, he takes back his dog, Hawking. And Steve was able to get back, but Hawking is not.
Yes.
So. That's pretty sad.
Don't tell Jason.
Yeah, no kidding. Then Steve goes, and Steve only has a couple of doses of this stuff left because you can't get any more.
Yeah. Did you ever watch or even hear about a TV show called Timeless?
No.
Timeless was a Sean Ryan produced show, so of course I was interested in it. I watched the entire first season. It was pretty good. Not good enough to get me to watch past the first season. Not even sure if I finished the first season, but, it was a show on NBC and, it was a time travel show. Very reminiscent of, Voyagers or Quantum Leap.
Mm-hmm.
Where characters would go back to time and sort of experience significant events that we would be familiar with. And so we kind of get to see different period pieces every week. But in the conceit of this show, there's a time machine, and there's like a crew of three. There's one doctor who's like a historian, one is a pilot, and one is like a spy. The pilot is this black dude, and probably like the the best line of the entire show is during the initial setup of the whole plot, when he finds out that they're going to have to keep doing missions going back into the past to fix whatever conundrum there was. He's not real happy about it. And he says explicitly, I am a black man in America. There is no time in the past that it's good for me to go to.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. That is another topic.
That's what Steve experiences in this movie.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, he does. He only has so many doses left, and he takes a dose in the location at the party location. Like, he goes up to these people's roofs, or maybe it was this girl, or it was here building her house or something, whatever. But mm-hmm. So he sits in the actual chair that Brianne took the drug in, and he takes the drug, and he ends up, and there are several like tribal men who are expecting their god or something to show up. And so this guy like literally falls out of a tree or whatever. And
yeah.
And then they try to capture him, and he ends up getting back. But anyway, he gets chased by these guys, and he gets up a tree and manages to take one of like their bead things with him and stuff. So Objects can kind of go back in time, which is kind of how he got this weird coin, and the sword is all explained by that. And when you like transition from one time to another, you kind of get pixelated or whatever almost. So that's why the sword looks so funky. It's because
sort of like you dissolve and then reassemble.
Yeah. So it was like the coin and the sword were not fully reassembled. Glad they didn't
deal with the person objects, like that. Objects kind of get screwed up as they go through time. So like his clothing and his watch that he's always wearing gets like progressively fucked up throughout the movie because he keeps going back and forth.
Ah, okay. I guess maybe he didn't notice his clothing. But again, another reason to rewatch. Because mm-hmm. I was going to rewatch it again this morning, but then I got my eyes dilated for an eye test and decided that was not a good time to watch a movie. Anyway, so Steve ends up at a bar, and Dennis finds him at the bar, and Dennis is really pissed.
Well, it's Steve's birthday, right?
Oh, is it Steve's birthday? Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and they had gone to a very sad strip club earlier in the thing, which, by the way, maybe that's all strip clubs. I don't know. I haven't actually stepped foot in a strip club, so no idea. But, seems like it could be a very sad place. So, they're at a bar, and Dennis is sort of pissed at Steve because Steve is just sort of disappearing and fucking up. Dennis's life is crumbling. And Steve...
Steve is super mopey. That's what he's pissed about.
Yep. Yeah. And Steve then explains his reason for mopiness. And then Dennis, of course, is pissed because you didn't tell me, you know. And also, of course, now Dennis's life has gotten also worse, if it was possible. Yeah. But they do have something, a bonding moment when they find out that the driver, Tom, was the one who was stealing morphine. And there's this whole subplot about Steve and flooding and his family. His family's coffins, were disinterred in a flood.
Mm-hmm. During Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah. And so we saw, the skeletal body of his sister or something.
Yeah, his sister who died as a child when he was still a kid, too.
Yeah. Ugh. So,
Yeah, and I think the point of the story is that Dennis was with him to, help him. at the time. But when Dennis saw the remains, he like passed out. So Steve not only had to take care of the coffins, but also had to take care of Dennis.
Exactly. Yes.
And never just did it, like never said a word about it.
Yeah. And they end up going to the graveyard of Steve's family, and that's where Steve shows Dennis the time travel videos. And they deduce that Brianna may have left a message for them to find in the park, and maybe so Brianna was the one who carved always, which they refer to as that stupid, fucked up, misspelled graffiti. But you never
very
understood.
Accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course they have this whole discussion that, okay, so Dennis wants to go back in time to save his daughter, but Steve's like, no, you got an old man pineal gland. Sorry, dude. And we only have so many pills, so can't do this. So Steve travels back from the rock and ends up during the Battle of New Orleans, where like bombs are raining around him, and he ends up getting confronted by what's described as the looter.
Well, that's after he finds her, though.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So he goes, and during the battle, he goes and finds her in a trench, and they're going to go back to the rock, and he only has one synchronic pill left. So she takes the pill as he's being held at gunpoint by this looter guy, who thinks he's a slave anyway. He's going to take him as property. And Brianna returns to the future while Steve is stranded in the past. But he does appear in a ghost form in front of Dennis, and they shake hands, and the film ends without knowing if Steve returns to the present. Actually, it's presumed that he never does return to the present, right?
We know. He does not.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole point. So I thought this was kind of a sappy end. It was good. It was satisfying in the sense that it ties up some things. And it allows Steve to be a hero, because the first thing he does after this is he starts carving always in the rock. So he's making his mark on the world after all.
Because it was not Brianna who did it.
It was him.
So Brianna, when I'm assuming Steve traveled back to the same time that Brianna traveled back to.
Yes.
So even though she has been gone for weeks, if not months at this point, in our time, when he went back, she had only been there for a few minutes, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
That's what I'm assuming. I'm
guessing.
Because otherwise she wouldn't still be near the area, right? Or alive.
Yeah, probably not. You're probably right. Yeah. Although, again, if we don't know how this works, if it's purely geography based, it would all be based on where he was at the time. So he would be within a couple minutes of where she was if he's sitting on the rock.
Right.
But yeah, if there's a time and space element to it. Because we didn't get enough. Well, did he go back to the same time more than once? He did, didn't he? Didn't he go like back to
Ice Age?
Yeah, so he proved that. Okay, so the same spot does lead to the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. By the way, they never did talk anything about like how changing the past reflects on the future, because it's not part of the story. Which is good.
From Tenet, what's happened happened.
Yeah. Well, again. Which, by the way, there's an article on Thrillist that I'm going to try to, because I had to figure out, I know there was a speech involved, but this whole always thing is some strange bullshit I don't quite understand.
Oh, why he carved always in, like, misspelled it?
Yes. Now, what's your take on that?
I don't know. It's never addressed.
Okay. Well, it might be addressed though. So here's the thing. Here's the speech. So Dennis was talking to Steve about the last conversation he had with Brianna was about their job, and explaining that most deaths occur in bed with varying degrees of difficulty. Just the tiniest percentages is a sudden death, and so as an ambulance driver here, a medic on an ambulance rig, he's seeing the exceptional cases. And it's a morbidly beautiful way of saying the inevitable is still somewhat unpredictable. In death, the wild cards of fate are the exceptional ones. But in life, all that crazy shit that happens before you die, there's always infinite possibilities. So, you know, he sees all ways of death. That's part, maybe. It's a stretch.
It sounds like a stretch.
Yeah. Anyway, the other example, which I kind of like too, comes right from Aaron Moorhead, where he was being interviewed at comicbookmovie.com. He said that Aaron Moorhead says there's the deeper meaning to always when you look at two words, always. The movie also has a lot to do with infinite possibilities. That's how time moves. It's like you move up to the present and everything expands into anything, literally in all directions. If I go way into it in 4D space, it explodes into a whole different direction. So during their final talk, Steve cuts off Dennis right before he finishes his sentence, and the last word he says is always. In a dimension of infinite possibilities, Steve's thread of time loops back on itself and connects where he sits down in the boulder and begins to carve. To Steve, this fate was completely unpredictable, yet it couldn't have happened any other way. Like, he doesn't have a choice about writing the stupid ass graffiti, because that's what he had to write.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter all the details that got him to there. What happens, happens. Like in Tenet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, any other thoughts about...
No, I mean, I really enjoy this movie, but talking about it made me like it even more. I'm glad you liked it. I was worried that, you know, us both going in cold.
There's always a possibility.
Yeah.
But no, I loved it. I think I was embarrassed about how much I liked it.
It's good.
It is. It's really good. Yeah.
I continue to be impressed by these creators.
Oh yeah. I want to see everything they do. In fact, I'm going to have to revisit, against my own better judgment, VHS Viral. By far the worst of those anthology movies.
Did they do a segment?
They did. Yeah. They do the skateboarding segment. Did you ever see VHS Viral?
No.
It's a segment where these teenagers are doing, or like being videotaped doing crazy skateboard tricks. And they're, if I remember correctly, they're the guy doing the videotaping kind of wants to film a snuff film. So he's sort of egging them on. And so they end up going down to Tijuana to do some crazy skateboard tricks, like in a dry lake or one of those like the LA River kind of canal things that doesn't have any water in it. And then some spooky shit happens. And so I'm going to have to watch that part of it again just to see. Because again, I didn't really, it's kind of like in the second VHS, VHS-C or whatever, that's also full of some, but the one I really liked was the cult one in Indonesia.
I think I only watched the first VHS.
Yeah. The second one it's not as good, but it's got better direction for sure. And the Indonesian one is very interesting. I like that quite a bit. And there's also a truly scary one about an eye implant. By the way, it's the VHS films, I think, when we talked about VHS to begin with, but all of those movies, all those anthology things. In fact, in VHS Viral, there was one story that was cut partly for time and partly because it was no way found footage. Like, there was no way to explain it as found footage, and it's just getting harder and harder because a lot of these things are like, yeah, this is not found footage, and it would never have been on VHS. It's all digital footage. It's always been digital footage, and that's what makes the whole thing work. But anyway, yeah. I love this movie. I think it's great.
You know what they're doing now, right?
I do not know what they're doing now.
These guys are doing now? Moon Knight.
Oh, yes. Yes. Is that a TV show?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And they're directing like some of the Moon Knight episodes. Got it.
Yeah. I think maybe they wrote them all and are directing some of them.
Huh.
But it makes me... I was intrigued by Moon Knight because Moon Knight's kind of a crazy character. But now I'm really excited. I want to see what they do with it.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I revisited Moon Knight just a little bit. Not real recently, but definitely in adulthood. And even going back to that sort of shell dev I did then, I was reading the synopsis for Moon Knight. And I remember that you had remembered the name is Mark Spector.
yeah.
And, was he always multiple personality, like dissociative identity disorder?
No, I think that came up later.
Yeah, that's part of this new series. Is he's got like distinct personalities. So, yeah. Oh, well. There may be a little Shazam action in there. The wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules, whatever.
Yeah, well, and he got his powers, and it's even unclear if he really has powers or if he's more like a Batman character. But the powers that he thinks he has, he got from like an ancient Egyptian god.
Yeah.
Which may actually just be mental illness.
Oh, there you go. Okay. That's yeah, because you're right, because he's basically Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
who sometimes forgets that he's rich.
I didn't realize that part of it either. I think I had like some sort of like Moon Knight like compendium or something, but it was all like first age Moon Knight, so it wasn't it was all older stuff where it was just all broad strokes and nothing gritty happening. I just heard about the Ultimates. I had never heard about the Marvel Ultimates or whatever.
Oh yeah, and the Ouroboros that is Nick Fury in the Ultimates.
Apparently there's some crazy like Quicksilver Wanda incest crap and lots of like weird brutal killing.
Yeah, I haven't read any of them.
I see some of the things from in the Comics Out of Context group on Facebook, which mm-hmm. is a little piece of joy as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I do know in the Ultimates, everybody thinks Thor is like almost a tick style escaped lunatic.
Ah.
Like no one actually believes that he's a god, but he sure believes it. So they kind of put up with him.
That's so funny. Yeah. No, apparently, like, yeah. I don't know. It's crazy stuff. So anyway, yeah, I'm going to suggest that you're going to say it's worth it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Synchronic 2019, I highly recommend it. It's great.
Yeah. I'm a bigger fan of Anthony Mackie, the more stuff he does.
Me too. Huge fan of Christian Grey now. Jamie Dornan. Who, by the way, yeah.
He's really good.
Evidently, you know, if you look at his history or whatever, you see, oh yeah, Christian Grey, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, he does a shit ton of charity work with, like, Irish charities or something. So, yeah. So, he's leaving his mark on the world.
What a good dude.
Yeah, seems to be. I mean, you know, I can't endorse him because I don't know anything more about him. He could be, like, a cult leader. Who knows? Okay. Any housekeeping?
I got something. I don't know if this is the best time to talk about it. At some point, I'd like to talk about weight loss.
Okay. Yeah. You have been successful.
Yeah. So far, it's been really weird. But yeah, I'm doing this thing and I'm down about 45 pounds now.
Which is incredible.
And it's the first thing that's ever like really worked for me. And some of the principles of this program I've been following have, just kind of blown my mind that it actually works.
So what's the program called?
It used to be called Naturally Slim, but they just went through a rebranding. It's called Wonder Health now, with no E in Wonder.
Okay.
But it's the same thing, and it's I think they're trying to rebrand themselves.
Is it like an app-based kind of thing, or is it a?
Yeah, it is. It's an app-based thing. Okay. It's got like videos every week that you watch, and that explains the program. It's I think they're trying to move away from being called a weight loss program. They want to be viewed as like a just overall health system,
like lifestyle health improvement programs. System.
Yeah, but and this was something that was offered. Offered through my work as like a free thing.
Oh,
like,
nice.
Well, if you do this, we'll pay for it. And I don't know why, like, it's been offered for a few years, but, this year I was like, I've gotten super fat over COVID. I'm what do I have to lose? I'll try it. So I tried it, and, it started in February for me. And,
so
it's kind of nuts.
3 months, 45 pounds. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the, one of the things I have noticed about sustained weight loss, that is oftentimes frustrating is that it's not linear.
It bounces up and down, you mean?
Yeah. Or the rate you lose is not consistent.
Oh, yeah.
Like week to week. I've been tracking it pretty closely since I started, and I've lost weight every week. But the first couple weeks, I was losing like maybe four pounds a week, which is a lot.
Yeah.
Like over the entire period, I've maybe lost. Sorry, mosquito. A pound and a half is probably what I'm averaging a week,
which is great. That's any more, much more than that. It's kind of scary sounding.
Yeah. But then there are some weeks where I'll like, I'm starting to understand it in a more predictable fashion. Like a couple weeks ago, I'd been kind of stagnant, and then all of a sudden I lost in 1 week, I lost 3 pounds. But now after that, it feels like there's sort of a rebound effect. So after that, I haven't lost hardly anything, even though my behavior hasn't really changed. It was like my body is sort of finding an equilibrium before it continues on weight loss. But it some of the things that have blown my mind are they say don't count calories because the difference between gaining weight and losing weight is oftentimes just like a couple hundred calories a day. And we don't have any convenient way at home to really count calories in an accurate enough fashion that we really know whether sure. we're in that window or not. So it's not a useful tool. But the biggest thing is don't eat unless you're really hungry. And during the first weeks, they kind of train you to figure out what it really means to be hungry. And I'm on week like 14 or 15 now, and I still don't really fully understand, but a couple of the touchstones I have is that if you want to eat, but you just want a snack, you don't want a full meal, you're not really hungry, according to this program.
Okay.
So you're not supposed to eat unless you're really hungry and you want to sit down and have a full meal.
Oh, okay.
And when you are that hungry, then you eat and you eat until you're satisfied. And that's another thing you have to figure out is like, when are you actually satisfied to stop eating? Because we often just eat and eat and eat way past when we're full. which I love to do because I love food and I love eating. So there's figuring that out too. But yeah, so just eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full. That sounds so simple. But that's really it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more complicated than that, but that's the biggest thing. Of course, you know, eating healthier is better.
Sure.
But there are no, they don't tell you to restrict any foods. They want you to cut back on sugar as much as you can, but yeah, there's no restrictions because they want you, when you do sit down and eat, they want you to be satisfied, because if you're not satisfied, you're going to keep eating.
Yeah.
Until you feel satisfied. So there's no food restrictions. There's no calorie counting. They want you to exercise because it'll improve your health, but they don't want you to exercise to lose weight because that's not effective.
Okay.
The amount you exercise doesn't help you lose weight according to this program, because the amount of calories you burn from exercise is pretty small compared to what you would need to burn to really affect weight loss.
Sure.
It's all about what you eat.
It seems like similarly, you can't track how many calories you're actually burning effectively, right, enough to do it.
Right. So it's been pretty nuts. And one of the first things they have you do is they want you to do what they call a sugar reset. So they want you to go start off 3 weeks without any added sugar. I don't know why 3 weeks, but I don't know. That seems like a lengthy time that feels achievable.
Yeah.
Right. Like 3 weeks, you can kind of talk yourself into it. If they started saying a month, you probably would feel discouraged, more discouraged about that. But yeah, I think that's why my first few weeks, I probably dropped more weight than usual because I was cutting out sugar. But after that, you know, you can add sugar back in if you want to. But the theory behind that is it sort of resets your sweet tooth after 3 weeks so that you don't crave it as much.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Explains the sugar monster.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's actually been really, really interesting to watch and track, because I eat what I want. I don't snack anymore. So that's cut out a lot of snack foods. That's not because I feel like I can't or I'm not allowed to. It's just I eat meals.
Yeah,
I wait until I eat a meal, which I think naturally just cuts out a lot of snack food. But if I want snack food, I just wait until I have it with a meal.
Oh.
So just by following some of those tenets, you sort of naturally cut out a lot of the junk. But yeah, I've been really happy with it. It's been wild.
Yeah, cool. That's encouraging.
Yeah. I'm really surprised. I'm now probably at the lowest weight I've been since I was in college.
Sweet. Well, I am downloading the app and investigating. Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow.
Because God knows. That's the thing. You know,
it won't work for everybody, but this is the thing that I found that has been really effective for me.
Nice. I like it. I like the idea. That's the thing, is that I'm like always on the verge of starting something new, but it's so easy to kick the can down the road. And then when I do go through the couple times that I've been pretty successful, it's like I kind of go sort of hardcore, which is not really sustainable. And then something weird happens, or something like life gets in the way, and I'm back to my old crappy habits. And it's easy to get, back up to whatever your fat equilibrium weight is.
Right. Yeah, and that's there's certainly a lot of there's a lot of psychological aspects to this program. That they want you to explore the reasons you do eat when you're not hungry, and they try and give you, you know, tips and tricks to deal with those instances. But it's overall they're very positive. They say things like, you can't rely on willpower, because if that's what you're relying on, you will eventually lose.
Oh, well, that's nice. I mean, realistic at least.
Yeah. And, talk a lot about, in the later weeks, talk a lot about, self-compassion. Like, you can't be hard on yourself, because it's ultimately self-defeating and not productive. So yeah, they do talk about a lot of the softer side of, you know, you have to take care of yourself so that you don't have those emotional triggers to eat.
Nice.
But yeah, so I'd recommend it. I don't think it's cheap.
Okay. I'll look into it, but at what price health, right?
If I had to go back in time, knowing what I know now, I would certainly pay for it, and I would have done it way earlier than I am doing it now at my advanced age.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Here you go. Yeah. Excellent. That's a great inspirational topic to leave it on. So
take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way.